Radio Prague News.
Czechs are marking the 50th anniversary of the 1968 Soviet-led invasion. More than 90% of the area of the Czech Republic has been affected by drought, and Czech filmmakers have launched a chain hunger strike in support of Ukrainian director Oleg Sentsov. The Czech Republic is marking the 50th anniversary of the invasion of Czechoslovakia by Soviet-led Warsaw Pact troops. A traditional commemorative ceremony took place on Tuesday morning at the Czech radio building on Prague's Vinohradská street, which witnessed some of the bloodiest clashes between civilian protesters and the occupying forces. The ceremony was disrupted by hundreds of people who gathered outside the building to protest against the presence of Prime Minister Andrej Babiš, whose speech was drowned out by chanting, whistling and jeers, most focused on him allegedly having been an agent of the communist-era secret police. Other participants included the Speaker of the Czech Senate, Milan Štěch, Chairman of the Low House, Radek Vondráček, and numerous witnesses of the 1968 events. More than 90% of the area of the Czech Republic has been affected by drought, according to a report carried out by a scientific team within a project called InterSucho. Over 72,000 square kilometers are currently affected by the drawn-out period of dry weather and lack of rainfall. In support of Ukrainian director Oleg Sentsov, imprisoned for alleged terrorism in Russian-annexed Crimea, Czech filmmakers launched a chain hunger strike on Tuesday, the 100th day of Sentsov's own such protest. A vocal opponent of Russia's 2014 takeover of the Crimean Peninsula, Sentsov in May began serving a 20-year sentence handed down by Russia for conspiring to commit terrorist acts. I'm Ruth Franková, and that's the end of the news. Hello and welcome to Radio Prague's special program marking the 50th anniversary of the invasion of Czechoslovakia by Soviet-led Warsaw Pact troops. Coming up in today's program, Czech Radio 1968 commemorative event has been partly overshadowed by a protest against Prime Minister Babiš. We meet two Finns who got caught up in the invasion while visiting Prague in August 1968. And later we speak to Johnny Krčmář, a former CTK journalist who recalls the fateful day of Warsaw Pact invasion. All that coming up, so please stay with us. One of the key events marking Tuesday's anniversary of the Soviet-led invasion was a memorial at Czech Radio, scene of the worst violence on the 21st of August 1968. However, the ceremony was partly overshadowed by a raucous demonstration against Prime Minister Andrej Babiš. Ian Willoughby has more.
Ta deska je tedy nyní nová a je připravena k odhalení.
The high point of Tuesday morning's memorial ceremony at the Czech radio building on Prague's Vinohradská street was the unveiling of a plaque bearing the names of two people who died at the station during the Soviet-led invasion but weren't previously known, Pavel Albert and Miloslav Malek. The unveiling was performed by the station's director general René Zavoral and Rudolf Matis. Mr. Matis was an editor at Czechoslovak Radio in 1968. He recalls fire and smoke as the station was attacked by Soviet tanks and a spirit of defiance.
I was happy about one thing. For a few days at least, a certain inner strength and national solidarity became stronger and stronger. And that I hadn't expected. I knew that such things could come along when conditions are more positive. But for the nation to unite in such a critical moment, unfortunately, it was only for a year.
Among the speakers at Tuesday's ceremony was Senate Chairman Milan Štěch, whose comments on public service media met with applause from the large crowd in front of Czech radio.
We can see around us abuse of the freedom that comes with democracy and of opportunities that we can't always defend effectively. This includes a flood of information of all kinds, and it is very hard to orient oneself. 1968 showed the fundamental role of public service media in critical moments.
When Prime Minister Andrej Babiš attempted to speak, he was almost completely drowned out by protesters, who whistled and chanted shame and STB, in reference to the fact he's been accused of collaborating with the communist-era secret police. However, the Ano leader attempted to soldier on.
Freedom and democracy are above all about being able to admit that others have the right to different opinions and different preferences. The Czech Republic has many talented people with great potential, but little is written about them. If we continue to fight amongst one another and to start conflicts, talented people will have no desire to become socially active.
This man, who said he was not a member of any party, explained why he'd come out to protest against Mr. Babiš.
It's 50 years since the occupation of Czechoslovakia by Russian soldiers, and this anniversary should not be sullied by an STB man who has enabled the communists to be in power. No other democratic party wants to enter government with them. I don't want my children to live through what I did.
Countless other events have also been held around the country, observing Tuesday's landmark anniversary.
Ian Willoughby with that report. Finns Pentti Avoma and Markku Pekkonen were students when they visited Prague in August 1968, keen to learn about communist Czechoslovakia's liberal reforms at first hand. However, soon after their arrival, they found themselves caught up in a Warsaw-packed military operation to crush the Prague Spring. Now in their early 70s, the pair have come back to Prague to take part in events marking the invasion's 50th anniversary. Ian Willoughby met up with them.
We came, I remember, about 3 days before the invasion, and it was a rather interesting situation. People were, after work, people gathered and talked, what will be the future of Czechoslovakia and what kind of communism or socialism they want. And they were not fighting, but talking.
And was there a sense of optimism, or did you feel like people were afraid?
I think that there was more the feeling of optimism.
A little bit, I think we were afraid that something might happen, because in spring also here were some military exercises, and they continued, didn't stop.
Where were you when you found out that Czechoslovakia had been invaded?
We came about at 2 o'clock in the morning to a nightclub in Strahov, and then the music stopped at first, and I was a little bit angry that this should be open, and why for you stopped this, and somebody came to explain to us in English that Russian troops have come, and of course we didn't think that it is not true, but they took us to the outside of this nightclub, and we saw heavy aeroplanes which were landing. After 50 seconds, new plane came, and then we understood that it is true that the invading has begun.
What was your reaction to this incredible news?
At least for me, the first feeling would be that this sounds very improbable, but this is a huge mistake which will now happen. And this is a kind of, I felt that like now the Russians, they wish to turn the wheel of the history backwards.
What kind of things did you see here on the streets of Prague? I guess you saw crowds, you saw tanks.
We took a taxi from Strahov, and we drove in early morning to the center of the city. We thought that there can be some fights. More and more people knew that what is happening. And we came to the center, and more and more people were crowding there. Somebody had a Czechoslovakian flag with him, and there began this demonstration, and we marched toward the headquarters of Communist Party. And there we saw first Soviet tanks and troops.
Did you see actual violence?
Yes, we saw. The major thing was the events at the radio house, actually, because I think the Czechs wished to keep control of the media. And there would be a lot of people in the radio house who declined to come out. And then we were at, actually it was the north of Vaclav Namesti, very near there. The Russians were speaking, with a loudspeaker that come out. And so if you don't come, so you use the military violence, which finally they used. Actually, they shot with the gun. And then they were just seeing one when the whole building started to be on fire and people coming out.
Yeah, the first one was when this demonstration group came in front of this Communist Party building. and there were those soldiers, Russian soldiers, and they began to shoot, but upward, not toward people. And then we also had to run.
And how long then did you stay in Prague, or when did you actually leave?
I don't remember exactly, was it 2 or 3 days later, around so. The authorities announced that all the foreigners need to be evacuated, and they had arranged train transport for all these. There were thousands of people. There were a lot of Americans, of course Germans, and also Nordic students like us. We chose that train which went to Nuremberg, Germany, and we continued from there then back home. But the other train went to Paris, I remember.
Today, how do you look back at that short period in your lives?
We certainly think it was a quite unique experience. In a way, we were grateful to be here, but of course there were extremely tragic events and had lots of repercussions in the whole Europe.
I think that when Moscow said in those days that they had to take these troops to Czechoslovakia to save the socialism, but it is paradox that what happened here, it destroyed socialism.
What does it mean to you guys to be back here today, 50 years later?
Just today we walked near this St. Vaclav statue and remembered these days.
We've had a life of quite many upheavals, and today we feel that it's a very important memory in our life, and that's why we wanted to come here also to respect the events and the victims, also to share these events with Czech people.
Marko Pekkonen, he and his friend Pentti Avoma were speaking there to Ian Willoughby. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague's special program commemorating the 50th anniversary of the 1968 invasion, in which we now bring you an interview with Johnny Krčmar, who worked for the CTK news agency at the time of the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. Daniela Lazarová has more.
Johnny Krčmář was a journalist working for the CTK news agency at the time of the Soviet-led invasion of Czechoslovakia. Like millions of others, he was woken up in the early hours of August 21st to learn that his country had been invaded by the armies of the Warsaw Pact. He was later forced to emigrate within the secret police operation Asanace. 50 years after that tragic event, Mr. Krčmář visited Radio Prague studio to share his memories of that fateful day.
It was completely irrational. Nobody sort of knew what was happening, really, because I lived one street above the radio station, and I was woken up by my next-door neighbour who said, the Russians are invading us. And I sort of said, well, you know, she was an oldish lady and she probably listened to the radio and God knows what she heard. And then I heard the sound of big aeroplanes flying right over our house in the direction of the military airport in Gbeli. And they were coming in 2-3 minute intervals. And so I went to the radio, and the first thing I heard on the radio was a statement in bad Czech saying that the armies of the Warsaw Pact had come to the assistance of Czechoslovak patriots. And so I said, God know what that is. And I switched over, and then I heard Czech radio and reading off the announcement of the presidium of the party, saying that essentially that we'd been invaded, and sort of calling for calm and saying we're trying to solve the situation, but sort of just stay calm. And I was working in the Czech news agency at the time, which was just down the road. And so I got dressed and went down and came.
So you passed the Czechoslovak radio building?
Passed the building. There were a few people in the street, but not much. This was about 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning. And cars were going up and down with lights on and hooting. One knew something was happening, but we didn't know what. And I got to the Czech news agency, which was closed down, and the security man said, look, it's all right, just go back and come back at 6 o'clock. So I turned around, went back, and from the window of my flat, I saw down into the Italska, and all of a sudden, down from the park on the other side of Italska, there was a column of trucks with armed soldiers on the back, and they were coming down towards the main road, and obviously they were going to move up to the radio. And at that moment, the driver of a bus coming from the other side came down the Italska, and when he saw this column, he swerved and blocked the street with his bus so that they couldn't get into the Italska. And there, at that time, a lot of people sort of rushed there and turned him over on the side, so that they blocked. And then there was another tram, which they also stopped, and they also tried to sort of throw that onto the side as well, just to sort of create a barricade.
So by that time, people had gathered and were trying to protect the building.
At that time, more people were. It was completely spontaneous, because the radio had always been a symbol of some kind of resistance, even in 1945, of course. So that they knew that the people, you know, were trying to stop them getting to the radio.
This was at about 8 o'clock in the morning.
No, this was 3, 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, in the morning.
I mean, this
right.
was sort of early morning. And so then I, by that time, I sort of said, okay, I've got to go back to work. So I went down past the radio, which was still completely empty, and went into the Chitty car, which by that time was open, and we were sort of working, so that was all right.
Could you get a free message out to the world still?
No. We were working until about 10 o'clock at night, because the Russians couldn't find us. Because what was happening as well was that people were taking down road signs all over Prague, all over the country, really, and they had maps, but they, you know, they couldn't find themselves, and so that when they were, and they knew that the Chitty car was something, and the people said, you know, where's Chitty car? And they said, well, somewhere on the other side of the road. And we were filing in English, French, Spanish, and Russian. And all of us were talking about the invasion. I mean, what was happening then, by that time, at about 9 o'clock, the radio was on saying what was happening. They had various messages also from leading politicians, and saying that the Russians had occupied the building of the Central Committee, and we don't know what's happening to our leaders and so on, but one or two were somewhere around, so they were giving interviews. Then they'd linked up with, I don't know, Ostrava, Pilsen, you name it, all the radio stations. They were sort of coming in and sort of having their saying what was going on there. And then at about 9 o'clock, Prague radio said, we've got to stop it because the Russians are occupying our building and we've got to leave, so that but don't worry, we'll be online again soon.
They were broadcasting later from a secret location. Yeah.
Within, I don't know, half an hour, because what happened, there was a system whereby the tram lines, the electric tram lines, could be used as broadcasting for the radio. So they switched onto the tram lines and they were broadcasting, but God knows from where. In the meantime, of course, the Russians had got to the building, and there'd been a fairly big crowd of people trying to defend the building.
With we should say, unarmed, with cobblestones,
well,
and using anything
unarmed,
they could find.
With nothing, just and also trying to speak to the Russians, because practically everybody spoke Russian, because they learned it at school, so that, you know, everybody knew, had a bit of few words of Russian.
So letting them know they were not welcome.
Yeah, sort of saying, what are you doing here? Get the hell out of here. And also they managed to set fire to one of the tanks outside the building, because in the meantime, of course, the tanks had come down from the Vinohradskaya and so sort of got rid of the barricade.
By that time, people were being shot.
By that time, we'd heard that at least one person had been shot outside the radio station, and that there was one tank was on fire.
And when were you stopped at the CTK news agency?
Well, we were broadcasting in four languages the whole day until 10 o'clock. And it was so that, for instance, the Russian service, they were broadcasting straight to TASS in Moscow. So Moscow knew exactly what was going on, because, you know, they were getting the same reports from the Czech, from the Russian service as Reuters or UP, API, DPA. And in the meantime, we were saying, well, right, what's going to happen? I mean, you know, they're going to find us, they're going to occupy us. We'd heard, we were told exactly what had happened overnight, that the former director of ČTK, Sulek, had come into the building and gone up to the foreign desk and tried to order the editor of the foreign desk to publish a letter of invitation from begging for help, signed by about 20 prominent, very, very conservative communists, including, I think, Indra Bilak, and I don't know who else. And the editor threw him out. And what happened also that we learned later was that Pravda and Izvestia in Moscow were published 2 hours at least later, because they'd been waiting for
this letter.
For the letter, which never came.
And what happened when you were actually occupied?
At about 9 o'clock, and there was lots of cannon fire where Russians were firing at the museum, because there was a bunch of people on the ramp of the museum and they were being shot at, but they were actually shooting above their heads. It was more or less so that this was a terrible row, but we heard it, but nothing happened still, you know. One of our colleagues was on the lower floor looking out onto the Opletalo, onto the main, onto the street. He said, all right, once something happens, I'll call you. And in the meantime, we'd sort of agreed with the editor in charge of the whole export that we'd prepare two reports, two small chores. One thing saying that the Russians were entering the building, and the second was that this is going to be the last
free
transmission of ČTK. And we had that on teletape, because at that
ready
time,
to run.
Yeah, I mean, at that time, everything was on telex. It was on telex tape, on paper tape. I'd written both of them in English, signed off, and just waiting to send them. And then at about 10, half past, or somewhere around 10 o'clock, our colleague from downstairs said, look, okay, they're outside, they're coming in. So I pressed the button and started transmitting. So the first report that the Russians are entering the building went out. And the second, where we said, right, this is the last message of the free ČTK. This was sort of running on the tape next to me. And then all of a sudden the doors opened and in comes a figure with sort of smallish, with a helmet sort of right down sort of to his eyes, with a coat right down to his legs, with a machine gun, and sort of stood there, and he was probably just as scared as we were. He was just looking there, and then he was followed by two men in civilian clothes who were sort of saying in Russian, stop everything, stop, stop, stop. And this was sort of going out all the time, so that this one came and tried to sort of stop the transmitter, and it didn't work. So we just tore the tape off, so that the second message only went out by half. And, you know, so that there we were sitting there, you know, wondering what was going to happen. And then some officer came in and just sort of looked around and said, all right, just stay calm and leave. This was in Russian, of course. Stay calm, don't do anything, and go. Went off again. And we started talking to these guys and sort of saying, right, what's going on? What are you doing? Why are you here? And they said, well, we've been told that there's a counter-revolution and God knows what's going on. And we said, well, look, nothing's happening. Our president, who is a hero of the Soviet Union even, said that you've got nothing to do here. And they were sort of wondering what to do. And by that time, about two or three of them had sort of formed in the doorway. We were talking together. And then suddenly one of them turned around and said, look, go away and sit down. So that we all sat down, and in comes the officer again, looks around and said, everything okay, and walked out again. And after he'd walked out, these soldiers said, all right, we can start talking again, you know. So this went on for about midnight, and then he came in again and said, right, okay, go home. And we said, well, wait a minute, we can't go home just like that, you know. They've been shooting outside, and it's midnight, and God never place it. Like, just go home. So they just sort of ushered us out of the building. And so we walked up the west of the square, which was stinking of cordite from the shooting before. And we got to the bottom of the radio station. And there it was smelt of burnt tanks and, I mean, burnt vehicles. And it had Russian soldiers milling around. So we skirted around, got to my house, and that was it.
In the days that followed, when would you say the mood changed from the first resistance and defiance and efforts to talk to these Russian soldiers to actually apathy, to the realization that they were just here to stay?
Actually, this was a strange thing that, for instance, the shops were open. They were reasonably well supplied. The place was completely saturated with illegal so-called publications. All the big papers were publishing on small leaflet types. And this resistance, in fact, continued more or less up to the date when the announcement came that they'd signed the Moscow Protocol a week later. But for that 1 week, people were resisting. They weren't talking to the Russians. They were isolating them. They were isolating even, let's say, people who were known to have collaborated, or they were warning people, sort of, for instance, editors or journalists, look, don't go home. There's somebody's been trying to get hold of you, but don't worry, we'll look after you. This feeling of total solidarity was there virtually until they came back from Moscow, when they heard this speech by Dubček, where he almost broke down as he was saying what had happened. Then things started we started realizing, all right, the Russians are here to stay, or they're going to be here for an awful long time. So, you know, we've got to sort of try and adapt, and somehow everybody knew that things are going to change back to where they were before 68, but nobody knew exactly what was going to happen.
Right, Mr. Kishmash, thank you very much for sharing those memories with us.
Not at all.
Thank you.
Daniela Lazarova with that special program, and we will have more on the topic later this week, and you can of course find much more on our website, that is www.radio.cz. If you have any comments about the program, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.